Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Moving Right Along, a Muppet Movie podcast brought to you by ToughPigs.com. It's the podcast where we watch The Muppet Christmas Carol 2 minutes at a time and talk about it a lot. I'm your host, Anthony Strand.
And I'm your other host, Ryan Rowe.
And joining us today, we have a return guest. I think you've been here for every movie, and you're back for this one.
I think that's right. Merry Christmas, guys. I'm Grant Harding, an old friend from the Tough Pigs Forum, back again for Christmas.
It's all true. Merry Christmas, Grant.
Welcome back.
And Grant is joining us to talk about minutes 75 and 76 of The Muppet Christmas Carol. In these minutes, Scrooge cries and wakes up in bed.
as we all do from time to time.
It's true. Sure. Maybe I should have said cries in a graveyard and wakes up in bed, but that's what happens. So we start where we left off last time with Scrooge crying by his own grave. And I have to say that out of context, not watching the entire movie, Michael Caine weeping and saying, "Ebenezer Scrooge," is a lot funnier than it is in the actual movie.
Just like the fact that this clip started with that.
Yes, the fact that the clip starts with him saying his own name, like in anguish.
Yeah.
Just makes it seem like he just remembered what his name is or something. You know? He's sad about it. He wishes his name was Michael Caine.
Maybe, yeah. There are no dates on the tombstone, right? We don't know when Scrooge was born and or died.
Right, we do not.
Hmm. Or there are, but they're covered in snow, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe they're still...
Yeah, right. He didn't wipe it off, maybe, right. The dates. But anyway, so then Scrooge says... So actually, before we get into the specifics, this is another one where I think I'm kind of going to have the old Curiosity Shop open the whole time.
Very good.
Because as with so many of these recent episodes... So much of this stuff is either directly from the book or slightly modified from the book that I almost don't know how to talk about it in any other context.
Sure.
You know? And that starts right here where Scrooge says, "Hear me, I'm not the man I was. Why would you show me this if I was past all hope?" Which, like, that's pretty much right out of the book. It's condensed very slightly, but
okay.
So much of this stuff.
And that's the crux of it, isn't it? Like, the mere fact that you're showing me this means that I'm not hopeless. I can turn this around.
Right. Yeah. That's what the whole story is about.
He hopes that's the case.
Not too late. Yeah. Not too late for him to change. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how he feels. You know, he's tearful. We see him embrace the spirit and he says, "I will honor Christmas and try to keep it all the year. I will live my life in the past, the present and the future." And then he goes on, "I will not shut out the lessons the spirits have taught me." And then he says, "Tell me that I may sponge out the writing on this stone."
Sponge out the writing is in the book.
You know, you would think so. And essentially it is. But in the book, the line is actually sponge away the writing on the stone.
Okay, just that verb, sponge, seemed like that stuck out to me. I figured that had to be from Dickens.
Right. It's too Dickensian for Jerry Jewell to have come up with.
It. Yeah.
Can you remove the writing from stone with a sponge? Is this a different kind of sponge that I'm not thinking of?
Yeah, it's a sponge that's actually just like a stone sander, and it's gonna
a really abrasive sponge.
A loofah.
Yeah, a loofah, very abrasive loofah.
Spirit, give me a magic eraser.
That's what Scrooge asks for.
Yes.
Yeah, but he does ask to sponge out the writing on this stone, and of course he cannot. He cannot sponge away. So here's a question: is one of the criticisms people often have of the book and of this story in general, is that Scrooge seems surprised to learn that he, like all mortals, will die. And this is maybe the line where that seems the most apparent. Like that I understand that reading the most, because it's like he sees that he has a grave and he's so tearful. Like, if you just take this moment in context.
Oh, just this see why by itself. Yeah.
Like, obviously, we've seen how nobody cared about his death. And that's what's really getting to him.
That's the point.
He dies friendless and without leaving any kind of, you know, warm memory for anyone.
Yeah, and I think we have been kind of building to this in our commentary about, like, who could it be? Who are they talking about? Who's the dead guy? And then, Scrooge is sort of willful ignorance of it. But yeah, I think it's making the connection between the two things, not just the fact that he's going to die someday, because of course he's going to die someday, but the fact that the dead person that everybody hated is him.
Right.
That's the point. Yeah.
And the one version, the one adaptation or somewhat adaptation of the story that like really drives this home is the Doctor Who episode, A Christmas Carol.
I love that one.
It's my favorite Doctor Who Christmas special. I think it's so brilliant. But one of the great things in it is that Michael Gambon as Kazran Sardik, as the Scrooge character, he thinks that the Doctor is going to, let me find the quote.
The Ultra Gorgon himself.
The Ultra Gorgon himself, Michael Gambon, he thinks that the Doctor is like trying to prove to him. The Doctor says, I'm not finished with you yet. You've seen the past, the present, and now you need to see the future. And then Kazran says, fine, do it. Show me. I'll die cold, alone, and afraid. Of course I will. We all do. What difference does showing me make? And then, of course, what the Doctor has actually done is brought his child self there so he can see like the horror and disgust in his own eyes as a child when he sees what he's become.
That's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's brilliant. It's the greatest. But it's also
spoiler alert.
Right. I should say, yeah, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen that episode of Doctor Who that is currently 13 years old. You should still see it. It's wonderful.
It's
I think, very clearly a commentary on this moment, right? You can hear Stephen Moffat being like, why does Scrooge care if he dies alone?
Yeah, like, let me just kind of spiff this up a little bit.
Right. So I know that's a little off topic, but we've been talking about other adaptations all season. So
yeah.
I feel like it's okay.
Have you guys ever seen Red Dwarf?
No, and I've always kind of meant to. It's like one of those things that I always felt like I should see.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is way off topic, so you can cut this out if you want to. But it's set in deep space 3 million years in the future. For complicated reasons, this character Rimmer is now dead. He's a hologram simulation of himself. So there's an episode where they go back in time trying to prevent the disaster that wiped out the crew. And Rimmer, the hologram, is talking to his past self, who is alive. And his past self is not listening to him. And he says, listen, look, 3 million years from now, you'll be dead. And his past self says, will I really?
Yeah. Awesome.
Kind of the same point, you know?
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I love Douglas Adams and I love Terry Pratchett. And it seems like people often say, if you love those two authors, you would enjoy Red Dwarf. And I just haven't tried it out, and I probably should. But anyways, what happens next in this movie? So Scrooge, now that he is unable to sponge out the writing on his headstone, he kneels down, grabs the spirit's robe and says, oh, spirit, please speak to me. And then he puts his head on the spirit's robe, falls forward into the spirit's robe. And suddenly the robe is not a robe. It's his bed sheets. And he's back in bed, which is such a nice cut. I think
it is.
I think
it's very well done. Yeah.
It's really so effective. Simple. There's no special effects. It's just he falls out of frame. He falls into frame.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and that's one of those things that it's actually the book kind of wants it to be more of a special effect. Because what the book says is, holding up his hands in a last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost.
Oh.
So in the book, it almost seems like reality is shifting around
him. Like the ghost is morphing into his bed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And here it's just a hard cut.
Yeah.
It's all of a sudden he's transported back.
Huh.
And I think it's more effective. I mean, also one of those things, as we've talked about, where like by this point in the movie, they aren't doing the showy special effects as much, you know?
Yeah. And this moment doesn't need to be though. This is just like, he's at his lowest and then boom, he's back.
Right.
You guys have spoken from time to time about the comic in Muppet Magazine.
Sure.
Sam the Eagle and Gonzo playing Ghost of Christmas Future, the big solemn cowl with a ridiculous nose sticking out. And there's a cute joke there where Scrooge says, why won't you speak to me? And he says, I forgot my lines. I mean, it would not work tone-wise. It would not work at all in this movie, but it's a cute joke.
No, they can't have him talk.
Well, and it's like such a Muppet Show joke, though.
Yes.
You can imagine if they had done this as like the Robin Hood episode or the Murder Mystery episode. Like, you can imagine that joke being in there for sure.
Because you'd be seeing the backstage at the same time anyway.
Exactly.
Right. They really don't do that stuff in this.
Yeah. No. And I think it's to the movie's benefit that they don't.
Oh yeah. It was the right decision. Previously. Yeah.
But speaking of Muppets, they arrive back almost right after this. So first, Scrooge takes about 15 seconds to slowly get up, look around, and realize where he is.
Yeah, I also timed that. About 15 seconds, no dialogue, just Scrooge whimpering and the clock ticking in the background.
Right, yeah. And then he says, "I'm home." And then he like chuckles and smiles, which is such a nice, subtle piece of acting from Michael Caine, I think.
Yeah.
That he's not like flipping out and jumping up and down. It's just this like little chuckle and I'm home.
Yeah, you know? it's just sinking in.
Yeah. But it's yet another example of the movie taking its time, where I think some other, especially like a children's film, a family film, some other people making this movie would have rushed through, you know?
Yeah.
Like we're going to talk about Tim Hill directing Muppets from Space later. I don't think Tim Hill would have given this 15 seconds to sink in.
I guess not. No.
But anyways, then Gonzo starts in with the narration from the beginning of Stave 5. We've reached Stave 5 in the book.
Is this the final chapter?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Stave it off.
We're staving it off. Stave 5. And Gonzo starts with the narration straight out of the book. Yes, the bedposts were his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. But that's as far as Gonzo gets. Because then we cut outside where we see him and Rizzo at the window. And Rizzo very helpfully says, "Hi guys, we're back," just so that we know.
Yeah.
And then Gonzo says, "We promised we would be."
I love that. I love how it actually is comforting. It's genuinely comforting in that moment and uplifting when Gonzo says, "We promised we would be." Like, yeah, they did. And they came through. Our old friends, right. They're here for us.
There's a TV spot for this movie in 1992 that I swear I saw as a child, but now cannot find, that opens with that line.
"We're back, we promised we would be."
"We're back, we promised we would be." And in that context, it's, hey, the Muppets are back.
Yeah.
With a new movie.
Yeah.
And of course, if you've seen Muppets Celebrate Jim Henson, at the end, they did promise they would be back.
That's true, That's true.
They'll be back with more Muppet stuff.
Yeah. So, hey, we're back. We promised we would be.
Right. They did it.
And I also wanted to point out that it's about 67 minutes into the movie when Gonzo and Rizzo say, "You're on your own, folks. We'll meet you at the finale." So it's only been about 8 minutes since they left. And I like it as a kid, certainly it felt like more.
It feels like a long time.
Gonzo and Rizzo have abandoned us. We're, you know,
yeah,
it's long enough to almost forget about them. And then when they show up again, it's like, oh yeah, right.
Oh yeah, this is a Muppet movie.
The guys, yeah.
Yeah. They're back. So they're back. They promised they would be. But what I think is fascinating in terms of the old Curiosity Shop and adapting the book, the first bit of Gonzo narration that we hear, as I said, yes, the bedposts were his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. All of that is straight out of the book.
Okay.
And then we see Gonzo and Rizzo. "We're back. We promised we would be." And then Gonzo continues narrating. And now it's not from the book. It's not at all from the book. So it's almost like them announcing that they're back and this is a Muppet movie again means we're back on Jerry Jewell's turf. Not
right.
I don't know. Because what happens is Gonzo says, "But the thing that made Scrooge happiest of all was that his life lay before him and that it could be changed." But in the book, he says, yes, the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. "Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in."
Okay, so the same sentiment, but...
but different wording. Yeah. Whereas, like, the first part is exactly the wording out of the book.
Yeah.
That's what I find fascinating.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if it was intentional. You know, how badly would I love to ask Jerry Jewell about adapting the screenplay?
You know what I
mean? Sheesh. But, because, I mean, as we've discussed on the show, I said that Muppet Family Christmas was his masterpiece during that season, and I'd still stand by it. But man, this is real close.
Oh yeah, especially now that we know how much of it was his own creativity and his own reworking.
The words were his own.
Yeah.
The words were his own. The emotions were his own. The puppets falling off of high things were his own.
Man, have you spoken about Rizzo's scarf in this podcast yet?
We have not. Please tell me your Rizzo scarf thoughts.
Because many people like to say that Rizzo is wearing a Gryffindor scarf in this movie. which I understand is from some children's book about pixies or something. I'm not sure, but
sure, yeah, something like that.
But I can tell you, he's not wearing a Gryffindor scarf. He's wearing a Mount Allison University scarf, which is a university I went to in Sackville, New Brunswick.
Oh,
what, really?
And school colors are garnet and gold, and I have a scarf just like that.
That's wild.
So in 1992, that's what those colors would have represented.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't intentional. But.
Huh. That's funny. And I'm sure that the university does not make scarves in a rat size.
Not that I know of. Well, they might make teddy bears wearing little scarves. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a good look for him. He looks great.
Yeah, we always love Muppets in winter wear.
And this movie is full of it.
Yeah.
But anyways, we don't spend too long with Gonzo and Rizzo here because we cut right back inside where Scrooge is pacing around muttering about changing his life. And again, most of this dialogue is right out of the book. I will live my life in the past, present, and future. Oh, Jacob and Robert Marley, he says. Oh, heaven and the Christmas time be praised for this day. And yes, as you might guess, Charles Dickens wrote heaven and the Christmas time be praised.
Okay, yeah. I did find it interesting that he invokes the names of Jacob and Robert Marley.
Yeah. Well, and of course, in the book, he just says Jacob.
Well, yes,
he just
says, of course.
I say it on my knees, Jacob, on my knees.
But that in this version, he doesn't also say like, oh, and you three spirits, thank you so much for your...
Right. For your and help. Fozziwig.
Yeah.
We should all thank Fozziwig.
All the guys.
We're going to find out shortly that Fozziwig is still alive, I guess.
That's true, yeah.
Spoiler, Fozziwig and the headmaster are both still alive.
Yeah, they're not ghosts yet.
Nope, they're elderly men.
Right.
They're the two old men in the balcony now.
Oh, yeah.
I should save that for when we get there.
Okay, you'll say it again then.
Yeah, I'll say it again. But anyways, then, so Scrooge is so excited. He sees that the curtains are not torn. And then he adds...
The famous bed curtains. Here.
Yeah, his famous bed curtains are not torn. And I'm here, more's the miracle. Now, this one, I'm here, more's the miracle. That's Jerry Jewell.
Huh.
Yeah, that's not in the book.
Okay.
It's good, though. I like it.
It is, yes.
And then the next thing that happens is that Scrooge looks in the mirror, touches his hair, kind of like mutters in disgust, like he can't believe what he looks like, and then decides that he isn't bothered by it and runs off.
Well, yeah, he does a little take. Like, he looks in the mirror like he can't believe he's really there. He goes, oh, and then he looks at his hair and goes, oh. Like,
yeah, although do we think Scrooge was vain? Like, I feel like Scrooge never cared about his appearance, really. I mean, I don't know. I guess he dressed well. Although Miss Piggy didn't think so.
Yeah.
I've never really understood that moment. I always laugh at it. It always makes me laugh, but I don't actually get what it means.
I don't know. I laugh every time. It strikes me as something that they might have come up with on the day, on the set.
That seems likely.
I think it's just that he's so happy to still be alive and to still be flesh and blood in reality, but then there's this one little, like, just this one little thing. He's not having a good hair day, so that brings it back down to earth for a second.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
No, never mind.
Right.
right. But he's so, he doesn't know what to do. He says, I don't know what to do. And then he starts playing the game simile from the George C. Scott movie, A Christmas Carol, because he says, I'm as light as a feather. Thank you. I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I'm as merry as a schoolboy. Now, unlike the game simile, this is straight out of the book. This is directly taken from the book. All three of these.
Well, I feel like Scrooge always says merry as a schoolboy in adaptations, right. But he doesn't always say the other ones.
Right. And merry as a schoolboy is probably the most memorable phrase of them.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, light as a feather is kind of a cliche at this point. I don't know if it was in 1843.
Right.
But then the middle one is, I'm as happy as an angel. Are angels, I mean, I guess like singing praises and stuff, but I feel like so much of what we think of angels doing is like seriously going about their business. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I don't know
that we think of angels as lighthearted largely in the popular imagination.
No, that's
true. Are we talking about little people with wings, or are we talking about wheels inside wheels with a million eyes?
Well, either one. Like that's what I mean. Like,
yeah.
Like biblically or like... colloquially, you know.
Oh,
like,
what about the angel that wrestled? Was it Jacob?
Jacob.
That angel probably wasn't very happy.
No, right. And but even like when you hear stories about like angel, like people saying stories about angels, or whatever. It's so often like an angel saved me from it. It's not like
right. Oh, there's an somber. Angel shows up to, like, yeah, they're not just like, yeah. Hey, I'm an angel. Hi, how you doing? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. It just feels like a strange comparison to make. Hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who am I to judge?
I've never met an angel.
Me neither.
Also, the character Angel from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and the spinoff Angel is frequently not so happy.
He wasn't happy.
He's not a very happy guy.
Occasionally, but overall, not. He's pretty dour.
His whole hook is that if he gets too happy, he turns evil.
Right. So there you have it.
Baked into the character.
Right.
You've forgotten that.
Yeah. But in this one, who else is not going to get too happy? It's Rizzo. Because we cut back outside where Rizzo asks, do you think it's safe for us to be up here? Rizzo's worried about getting knocked off something high again. And Gonzo is not, because he says, Scrooge is saved. What could happen now? Well, friends, we know what could happen.
Why do they think that anything would be different just because Scrooge is saved? There's no reason. There's no logical connection to be made there. Scrooge is good now, therefore we can't fall off this window ledge. That doesn't
people still open windows even when they're happy.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah. And he does it. He opens the window, does his signature move, which is pointing, and that's where we stop. That's where we cut off.
Yeah, it's a beautifully cut end of the clip.
In at least when I watched the clip, at the very end Scrooge started to say yeet. But that was as far as he got. Yeet. Yeah, yeet. So who knows what he's going to say?
He's saying yeet.
Yeah, Mr. probably.
Mr. Scrooge, I heard you say yeet.
That's why he looks in the mirror. He's got to catch up on his cummerbund.
Right, exactly. I heard you yell, aye. Okay, anyway.
Yeah, that's it.
Great Muppet Caper. What a great movie.
Yeah.
We should do a podcast about that, Ryan.
Okay, let's watch it 2 minutes at a time.
Let's watch Great Muppet Caper 2 minutes at a time again.
Okay.
I'd do it, man. I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
What a great movie. All right. But we still got some more stuff to talk about with this one. So before we close, any other thoughts about these 2 minutes? Grant, I'll start with you.
About these 2 minutes, no.
All right. Very concise. Ryan.
About these 2 minutes, no, but is this a good time to cover some other general notes, or should I hold off on that?
I'm saluting general notes.
General notes?
General notes.
All right, I have one item from the old listener comment bag. We have been speculating, especially in the episode with Danny Horn as our guest, speculating about how this movie became a classic in the first place after not being so popular when it opened. But apparently it somehow was successful enough that Disney wanted another Muppet movie 4 years later. On the Tough Pigs forum, Tough Pigs pal Hugh pointed out that this movie was shown a lot on the Disney Channel in the 90s, and especially when they would do their free preview weekends back when the Disney Channel was a premium channel. So it's likely that a lot of kids saw it on the Disney Channel as part of the free preview weekend, and even not part of the free preview weekend when it was aired and re-aired and re-aired over the holidays. So that might have also contributed to the rise in popularity, even for kids who didn't own it on VHS.
Yeah, well, isn't that a really good theory?
Yeah,
isn't that pretty much the story of Wonderful Life? That it was just on TV all the time. That's how.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And that one, there was even some confusion over who owned the rights or if anybody owned the rights. TV station used to air that.
Right, the rights had lapsed and then got back. United Artists or whoever it is got the rights back because of something about the music, I believe.
There was something
about how like the use of certain songs meant that they could reestablish copyright.
Yeah.
But although, who is it? Who owns it now? It's like Columbia Tri. I don't even know.
I don't know. Somebody does.
I got the DVD. Hey, wait! I'm gonna grab my DVD of It's a Wonderful Life just because I want to know.
Good.
I got that. It's Paramount. Yep. Paramount. I don't know why I said, it's Paramount when I previously said Columbia. But the answer is Paramount.
So Paramount currently owns It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
Good to know.
And they were able to reestablish copyright due to music rights.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. My other note is relating to my whole thing about previous or other adaptations starring previously existing characters. When we had Jesse Hassinger on the show a few weeks ago, we discovered that I had missed at least one casting choice from the Rich Little Christmas Carol because Jesse Hassinger looked it up and discovered that the role of the roles of the three businessmen were played by Rich Little as James Mason, George Burns, and John Wayne. So I vowed to go back and make sure that I hadn't missed any others. And it turns out I did miss one other one. It's the role of Scrooge's old friend, Dick Wilkins. And this is a Rich Little impression that we have speculated about for other roles.
Dick Wilkins. Okay.
Dick Wilkins. Is it Burt Ward? Because I know he used to do a Burt Ward impression.
No, that would have been funny.
He's just like, hey, we're at Fezziwig's party, Batman. You know,
it's one that you have, I think, asked, like, you have guessed this impression.
I've speculated.
I think so. And I've been like, no, I don't know Gene where this Kelly. Guy is. No.
Let's say Gene Kelly. I know he did
Agnes that. Agnes Moorehead.
No. No. I want to hear Rich Little's Agnes Moorehead impression.
Walter Brennan.
Nope.
Let's see. I'm trying to think who I've said on the podcast before.
It would be hard to remember at this point.
Right, because we've said so many. Peter Falk was already somebody, right?
Yeah.
So it's Telly Savalas.
Nope. Do you want me to tell you?
I don't know. Yeah, I do. I'm done.
It is James Stewart.
Oh, yeah!
James Stewart in the role of Dick Wilkins. Scrooge's old friend.
We're at Fezziwig's party.
Right.
Holy cow.
And then I found one other one that I missed, which is from that Muppet Magazine comic strip, A Sort of Christmas Carol. In that, one of the guests at Fred's party is played by Pops.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Wilkins and Wilkins.
Oh, that would have been hilarious. They were just drinking coffee in the corner.
Wilkins are actually in that, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been really funny, but nobody would know who they were.
Nobody knew who they were then.
Yeah.
Right. Now, how do you feel about Fezziwig's rubber chicken?
Yeah.
Yeah, then he hits him with it. That's great.
That's all you need.
Writes itself.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. But yeah, that's all
I got. Go ahead and make Wilkins and Wonkins Christmas Carol.
You know, I'm kind of surprised. I mean, there's like hundreds of those. But as far as I know, I don't think I've ever seen a Wilkins commercial riffing on A Christmas Carol.
Yeah, I guess what would you do? You'd be like, I've been visited by three spirits and I still don't like Wilkins or whatever. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know what the punchline would be, I guess.
Right, yeah.
Hmm.
It'd just be like, this is your grave because you don't drink Wilkins.
Oh, that could be, yeah. It could be Wilkins kicking Wonkins into his grave.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
It's true. Wilkins as one of the ghosts. Man, those Wilkins coffee commercials are great.
I love the
They're
way, like,
so
when
funny.
Yeah.
When Wilkins falls out of the tree, the way he bounces, it's amazing. I don't know what he's made of to make him bounce like that. Boing.
Did you guys ever see, and this is something I think listeners might be interested in if they haven't seen it, we'll link to it. Have either of you guys seen those? It was like just like a straight ripoff of Wilkins and Wonkins made by some other puppeteers.
Oh, yes.
And
they're like not funny. It's like exactly the same premise.
Yeah, those surfaced on YouTube a little while back.
Except it's just bad puppetry and not funny.
Yeah. Terrible puppetry. Yeah.
It's wild how unfunny they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't
remember even the name of the product.
Well, you can rip off the same concept, but just be completely unfunny.
Right. Let's see. I'm going to look it up. I want to
perhaps I will insert a clip of one here.
Purity Milk. Purity Milk.
Purity Milk.
It is listed on YouTube as 50s TV ads, purity milk, sadistic, Henson-esque.
Henson-esque. They wish.
Yeah.
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 Purity milk no Crammel.
Anyways, well, it's not. Anyways, we'll link to that, and we should link above it to the original Wilkins and Wilkins ads. Because some listeners probably haven't seen them. And despite being made for local television in the late 1950s, they are truly one of Jim Henson's masterpieces.
I agree. Yeah.
They really are.
Yeah. Like, and they do make the rounds occasionally online, and every time people discover them for the first time. So,
yeah. And people discover that Kermit used to be a sadistic coffee salesman.
Ah, no, 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 no. If you're hearing about the Wilkins commercials for the first time, note that Wilkins is not Kermit because Kermit predates Wilkins.
Take it, Anthony.
And the song Wilkins is a pointy gent. I don't remember how it goes. Ryan wrote a song about this in, wrote a poem about it in a Tough Pigs article. And I made a video singing the song.
Yeah.
I do remember that it contained the line, Kermit's almost 3 years older and far less likely to crush you with a boulder.
That was
part of it. Yeah. Oh, that's some of your best work, I think, Ryan.
Oh, thanks. We record this, the best Tough Pigs article of all time, March Madness tournament is happening on the Muppets No Context Twitter account. I believe that article of mine was nominated.
I think it's in there.
I think it's in the bracket. I know that I nominated it.
Oh, well,
other people may have too, but I know I did.
I mean, I'm sure by this time it will have been eliminated by the time this episode airs, but.
Right.
It's an honor to be nominated.
It's truly an honor to be nominated. Like I have six articles in that thing.
Yeah. And I nominated some of yours.
Thank you. And like I'm up against like Danny Classics and like I'm up against Shane's Scooter Fist video.
Ooh,
I know. Yeah. And like Becca's Labyrinth NFTs. Like they're all like everything I'm up against, I would vote for over my own work. No question. You know?
Right. It's a wide variety of stuff, but all good.
Yeah, it makes me really proud to be a part of Tough Pigs.
Yeah.
That there's so much high quality stuff on this bracket and I get to be a small part of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice. I wrote a dumb article about how much I love Derwood Clapper and now it's in an online term. So we really should thank
Tori. One of my favorites.
Thank you. We really should thank Tori at No Context.
Yes.
Muppets No Context Twitter for putting this whole tournament together because we didn't do it. She did it. You know.
That's true. Yeah. And I guess, the tournament might even be over by the time this airs. But
yeah. And then we can find out which Danny article deservedly won.
Right. Yes. Yeah. We'll link to that in the show notes also.
Yeah.
Jim Henson, the index.
Oh man,
that's Jim a good
Henson,
one.
The index is so good.
When Danny phrase, wrote an index for Jim Henson the Works because it didn't have one.
The phrase East Coast pickles, comma, funny tasting. Stay in my brain forever. I love it.
There's a series. So in the foreword, Harry Belafonte like very earnestly talks about how he's seen children watching Sesame Street all over the world, which is like very heartfelt and sweet. And in the in that index, Danny puts ghetto in New York City, Chicago, or Detroit, location where Harry Belafonte has observed children watching Sesame Street. Hovel in a Native American reservation, comma, dust covered, location where Harry Belafonte has observed children watching Sesame Street. Tin shacks that house the thousands in East Kingston, Jamaica, location where Harry Belafonte has observed children watching Sesame Street. It's like remarkable to me that he takes this like very genuine moment and turns it into a joke.
Yeah.
And it's like doesn't feel like he's insulting Harry Belafonte.
It doesn't seem disrespectful.
Yeah. It's just it's really
what a good website.
Thank you. I mean, I can't take credit really. I'm a small part, but
we're all
thank you
part.
On behalf of the Tough Pigs team.
It's and really all of our readers and listeners are a part.
Yes. Thanks for keeping Tough Pigs alive, gang.
I've noticed you're watching, too.
Yeah, and we are, and I've noticed that you're listening to this podcast, which continues with me asking Grant, what's your history with Muppet Christmas Carol?
So this movie came out, Christmas 92 was around my 8th birthday.
Mm-hmm. And mine too, as we've discussed, we're birthday buddies.
We are, very close. So I saw this in the theater with my mom. First Muppet movie released in my lifetime. You'd better believe I was there.
Yeah, awesome.
And the main thing I remember is walking out of the theater after the movie. And my mom said to me, so you realize that was Steve Whitmire as Kermit.
When you were 8, your mom said that to you.
Well, yeah, because I knew that, of course, I knew Jim Henson had died. They tell us right at the beginning of the movie. But I had seen Muppet Celebrate Jim Henson, and you know it's all about how he's gone, and then Kermit comes in at the end and you know has a new voice. But until my mom pointed that out to me after seeing the film, it had not crossed my mind.
Hmm.
Kermit was just Kermit from Go.
Sure, awesome, love it.
also, like a lot of kids, I think I had false memories of the cut songs actually being in the movie.
Oh, sure. So you had the soundtrack?
I had the soundtrack because, of course, you know, Danny has written on Tough Pigs about how in his childhood you'd see a movie in the theater and then you didn't know if you'd ever see it again.
Right.
Maybe unexpectedly on TV some Sunday afternoon. By the time I was a kid, there was home video, but you had to wait a year between seeing the movie in the theater and buying it on video.
Yeah, especially for a Christmas movie.
Right. And so in the meantime, you listen to the soundtrack. And so I genuinely believed that I had seen those songs in the movie.
Hmm.
And I even wrote to Buena Vista Distribution and said, hey, I bought this movie and you cut out two of the songs. Where can I, you know, what gives? Where can I get a complete version? And they sent me back the form letter that they send to people who write to them to complain about continuity errors. I was like, oh, you didn't read my letter.
Oh, they didn't even send you a specific reply.
No.
I'm sorry about that. You deserved better. Next question is, where would you rank Muppet Christmas Carol among the Muppet movies currently?
Hard to say exactly, but it's certainly in the top half. I love how this movie looks. Mm. I mean, sure, by this point, the puppets themselves had accumulated such a diversity of styles. In this movie, you've got characters from The Muppet Show. You've got puppets designed by Michael Frith for Fraggle Rock. Puppets designed by Diane Dawson Hearn for Bunny Picnic. Puppets designed by Bruce McNally for Dog City.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all just... it's just wonderfully wonderful mixture of styles, but they all work well together. And as you guys have discussed, Brian Henson shoots puppets in such interesting ways. That shot during Scrooge of the pigeons looking down.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic. It reinforces that this is a world where everything is alive and can sing.
Right.
Right.
And it's amazing to me that this is his first movie. I mean, it looks like before this, he only directed Mother Goose Stories and 3 episodes of Dinosaurs. Really?
And actually, I think only one episode of Dinosaurs. Like, I think two of the three were actually post 92. Like,
oh, there you go.
You know, because Dinosaurs ran until 94.
Mm. That's right. I forgot that.
Only did one before this movie. Yeah. So it really is impressive.
Yeah.
And then he made two other equally great feature films that are just as impressive, and everyone loves them.
Yeah, I mean, it's really too bad that he hasn't gotten more opportunities to direct. Even if not something with Muppets or puppets, you know, I think he's very good technical director.
Well, and we've talked before on this podcast about how Frank Oz, you know, who's the other Muppet person who went on to direct other features. He kind of like weaned himself off of puppets, right? His Dark Crystal is all puppets. Muppets Take Manhattan has many. Little Shop of Horrors has one puppet character. Mm. And then from Dirty Rotten Scoundrels on, it's zero. Like his fourth feature, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, he's worked it down to zero puppets. And he stays there for the rest of his career. Including the scene in Stepford Wives with a robot dog. That's the ugliest, stupidest looking robot dog CGI I've ever seen in my whole life. You got Frank Oz directing and you can't put a puppet robot dog in your movie? Anyways. Finally, Grant, do you watch Muppet Christmas Carol every year?
I watch it most years.
Yes, okay.
There's no real rhyme or reason. There's so much you're trying to watch at Christmas.
Yep.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
A Wish for Wings That Work. And
you got to watch it.
Claymation Christmas Celebration. And
That's one of my must-sees.
Yeah. Right. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
That scratches the surface of the tip of the iceberg.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm as you know, I'm right there with you. I have in the past written Facebook posts ranking my 50 favorite Christmas specials and separately 50 favorite Christmas movies. So well,
yeah, and didn't you also do like your 50 favorite Christmas episodes of shows?
Yeah.
So
that's 150 pieces of Christmas entertainment that I narrowed down from a larger list of every
too
time.
Much, man. It's too much.
It's way too much. It's way too much. So I do get it. I'm right there with you. But that just about brings us down to the end of this episode. Listeners, you can always find toughpigs.com on the internet at toughpigs.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're probably walking down the street. You never know when you're going to pass us by. The people in your neighborhood are the staff of toughpigs.com.
Yeah, you never know.
You can become a patron at Patreon We always love to get new patrons. That would be a thrill for us. You can email us at movingrightalong@toughpigs.com. You can follow Ryan on Twitter. To this day, Ryan haunts Twitter still at @MeRyanRowe. You can also find Ryan on Letterboxd at @MoviesAreNeat. You can find me on Letterboxd at @ZeppoMarxist. And Grant, where can our listeners find you and your work?
You can follow me on Instagram and YouTube at @AbstractGrant. And you can see all my various puppet projects. I'm not plugging anything specific right now. Things are kind of on hold. I'm kind of in baby mode right now. Sure. I want to plug something you did, Anthony, which is your Disney reviews, because I had a small hand in them becoming what they became.
Oh, well, that's really nice of you. Yeah, and I posted all those on Letterboxd. So I mean, I guess we could link to the ranked list if we wanted.
Yeah, of course.
So what Grant is referring to is that my family and I decided to watch all of the Walt Disney feature animation movies in reverse order, starting with Encanto, which was the newest one at that time. And when we got to the second one, we had a dragon fruit. And Iris, my daughter Iris, said, "We should eat this dragon fruit," because the film was Raya and the Last Dragon. So we did, and I posted on Facebook, enjoying some dragon fruit with Raya and the Last Dragon. Grant then commented, "Oh, are you going to do food pairings for every movie?" Which we weren't planning to. And then Grant posted that, and me and Roz just kind of looked at each other, and we're like, "Yeah, let's do that."
I am now.
Yeah, and it was so much fun. So thank you. Truly thank you. It was, I mean, I think I've thanked you previously, but it's really a thrill that worked out. Because it truly was like such a fun thing for our family all year. And like now we're doing Pixar too. We're only four movies in. We're still in the golden age. You know, we started Pixar at the beginning. We didn't do Pixar in reverse order because it would be less fun to start with the more recent ones.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases. There. But yeah, thank you. That's really nice of you to bring up.
Yeah, I think it's really fun.
Thank you. What else? Thank you as well to Morgan Davey for designing our beautiful logo for this podcast. I don't know if we talk enough about how great our logo looks. You're listening to this on some sort of device. Take a look at that thing. Looks great. Thanks, Morgan. And thank you to the listeners for giving us those positive reviews, for spreading the word, telling everyone that you love the podcast Moving Right Along and they should listen to it. And finally, most importantly, for joining us next week, we'll be back with another episode. Goodbye.
We'll be back next week. We promised we would be.
Expect the next episode when the calendar reads Tuesday.